Okay. Hi. Nice to meet you all. How's everybody doing? Okay. I'm going to ask you first, just a few examples. Can somebody tell me what are some of the impossible challenges you are interested in solving? So what did you talk to your partners about? Just throw it out or raise your hand. Yeah.
The broken campaign finance system in America.
What? Everything's working great. I don't know what you mean. The broken campaign finance system. Yes, I would wholeheartedly agree. Okay, yeah, good. Let's solve that. I'm down. Okay, what else? What else came up? What seems impossible? What are you like, ugh, somebody should do something about this. Oh, wait, it's me. Okay. Coral reefs, yes, I know, those are cool. We should keep those. They're important, turns out, to the health of our planet. It's we only have this one that we know of, so we should probably take care of it. Okay, what else, yeah? In the CPS, the Child Protective Services, yes. Yeah, yeah, okay. And did you guys, how far did you get into talking about how you're gonna address this? Did you guys get that far? Okay. What's our first, right? Okay. Perfect. Perfect. Honestly, that's the hardest part, right? Is the first step. Okay. So what I'm hoping that we can talk about tonight, I'm gonna talk and give you kind of an overview about how I see things and what I've experienced. I'm really looking forward to the questions. So please start thinking of some now and just everything's on the table. I'd love to just hear what you're dreaming about. Because essentially, we're trying to go from impossible, which if you look around in the world today, these are good examples, and we could brainstorm probably a million others, right? There's a lot of things that seem completely insurmountable. And our job is to start, right? I thank you for putting that out there, that I think in my experience, the things that I've been able to help and watch come from impossible to inevitable, it wasn't because somebody was like, oh, I've figured everything out and I know everything I need to know. It was because you just start, just attack, like step one. So I love this exercise that you guys were just doing. All right, so there's gonna be, I'm gonna give you sort of three big takeaways in how I see it, and just give you some things to think about. And then, like I said, we'll get to questions. Number one, listen to your intuition. It will never steer you wrong, first of all. But this is the key to understanding how the world works, right? If you can actually learn enough and then trust what you're feeling about something, that's gonna take you to the right place, always. And so I put up some examples here. Okay, so as Wayne was kind enough to sort of give you an overview, these are some of the bigger things that I've been, you know, these are just some symbols that I threw up here. But I've been able to be part of something as big as literally bringing the stars into a thermos here on Earth, harnessing the energy of the stars in a thermos that we can then use to power all of our energy needs, right? The giving place, that's a picture of Warren Buffett, if you weren't tracking that. That's kind of an adorable picture, actually. Warren Buffett is one of the, you know, he was one of the first, you know, billionaires, and definitely one of the most famous. I worked on what became the Giving Pledge, but essentially it was at the beginning, I started working on it because somebody that I trusted said, you know, Jaima, I bet you've heard of Warren Buffett and Bill and Melinda Gates. They have this idea. They want to see if they can get other people to give more of their wealth to good causes, right? Instead of, let's be honest, who needs a yacht, okay? We have the have and the have yachts, and now we have too much of it. So anyway, they were brainstorming about what do we do about this. And this was just an idea. So when I came on, it was because, you know, Jaima works hard. I was pretty young, right? I was relatively junior in my career. But they knew that I was somebody who was going to work hard, who likes thinking about hard things, and who cares about why we do things in the world. And so the intuition that I'm talking about was, this is, I didn't know where this would lead. I didn't know the first thing about philanthropy. That was not something that I had ever, I certainly did not come from a world where we were giving money away, right? I had no sort of background in that work, but I knew that I wanted to be part of something big. I knew that I wanted to be part of people doing a better job than yachts, right? I knew that I wanted to be part of what we eventually did end up being able to do, which is changing some of the norms around what it means. If you're lucky enough to get wealthy, I mean, Warren Buffett calls it winning the ovarian lottery. It's not random, right, who gets wealthy, right? We can trace if you are lucky enough to be born to privilege, you know, to a family that's going to help you get it, right? It's a lot easier, that, right? It's called being born on third base, right? And so how do we change the norms from, well, look, this wealth is just going to continue for generations and be passed on, to, hey, let's actually use this. It's a tool. Money is a tool like everything else. How do we use this to make the world better for everybody? So this, that first point is really important as you're thinking about your first step, especially out of, you know, coming out of undergrad. I think, to me, it's a myth that you're just gonna, that's not true. For me, it was a myth that career is linear, right? I think some people do. I came out of undergrad 100% sure that I was going to run for president of the United States. Sure, because I saw things that were unfair and I thought, well, how do you change things? Laws are what govern our lives, so I'll just change those laws. How do I change those laws? I guess I should just be the most powerful person on earth, right? I'll just run for president. Okay, we're seeing that that position is pretty powerful right now, right? Like it wasn't totally off, right? I had a good instinct there. But I started studying that, right? So I went to college at UCLA. I actually, right out of college, this is a funny story, actually. This is how old I am also. So just out of college, my very first go get a job, I was flying across the country on September 11th, 2001. My flight was at 9 a.m. from Los Angeles to Washington, D.C. Obviously, the plane did not take off that day. Side note, my now husband, then boyfriend, had flown on September 10th and was staying at a hostel in Pentagon City, heard the plane hit, got inspired to study terrorism, and now has written books about terrorism. So more examples of following a non-linear career path and following your intuition about something that really makes you passionate. So, okay, so I didn't fly on September 11th, but I flew on September 15th or whatever, the first plane flying to Washington, D.C., because I was like, are you kidding? Let's go. Like, I need to get working. Like, this is crazy, right? So you can't plan this stuff, right? And obviously things like that are big curveballs. But what you can do is use those clarifying events to understand what you are really passionate about, right? I could have said, ooh, scary, I don't want to go to DC, I'll just find something better to do. But in fact, it just sparked my fire even more. And like, I was like, this is where I need to be, let's go. Okay, so I think the drawing, like what is actually calling to you? What's pulling you, right? There was no other option. I had to go to DC. First of all, the person that I loved was there by himself, and I was like, we didn't even have cell phones, you guys. It was so long ago. okay, now I'm that old person. I hate when that happens. Okay. On this last point, this is a critical thing that you probably already know. I'm getting a sense just from being in this room with some of the people who are leading your major. You know how to choose good people. right? The most important decision you can ever make is who you're going to surround yourself with, right? Obviously, that's true in partner relationships, but it's true in what college you go to and what kinds of people you're studying with and what kinds of people are leading your, and what kinds of people have, you know, inspired the entire Francois in the last row here, right? If this is the orientation, if you're hanging out with people who have that kind of orientation in the world, you're going to be aiming in the right direction. You're going to be encouraged to do that. And so I think as you're thinking about your first job, it's the person. So go, like, and that's where you really tap into the intuition in the interview, or if you're lucky enough to have some background about this person or be able to sort of back channel and understand if they're really, what kind of person they are, right? The leader that you're working for, and that's true, it now governs everything I do. I literally meet the people, and I've literally walked out of interviews and been like, nope, right? And because it's not worth it, life's too short. Okay, what else did I want to say about this? All right, so please feel free to ask me about any of this. All right, the second big picture thing I wanted to talk about, and this will go into a specific example. Vision plus evidence is how you start movements. So either one of those is great, but without the other, right, you're not gonna get as far. So let's talk about fusion. Okay, so where to start this story? Okay, let's start with $1.8 billion. How about that? Okay, fusion energy, have you seen Iron Man? Raise your hand if you know what fusion energy is, or if you've seen Iron Man. Does that, okay. Okay, a few of you. I hadn't even seen Iron Man when I decided to study fusion energy, so let that be a lesson to you. Do not be intimidated to just start things, even if you don't know what you're talking about. In fact, especially if you don't know what you're talking about. I ended up helping launch a company called Commonwealth Fusion Systems, which is a fusion energy company spun out of MIT. Basically, nuclear physicists have been studying fusion, which is the power of the sun and the stars. It's how, ooh. Oh, wow. Well, that was exciting, okay. I was really trying to make that point. Could I ask you? You're wonderful, thank you. That was an illustration of how the fusion reaction happens. It's an explosion and it generates a lot of energy, much like, okay. you're wonderful. Thank you so much. okay. As you can see, I'm not the expert on fusion, as I just admitted to you, right? I didn't even know what it was. When somebody called me up and said, hey, Jaima, there are these people who started a company out of MIT. It's a fusion energy company. They need your help thinking about all the things in the company that are not the fusion part. And I was like, ooh, perfect, good, because that's not the part I can help with. This company has now, so I raised $1.8 billion with the CEO for our Series B. They just raised another $700 million in a Series B2. Who knew that was even a thing? And Google has bought the first 20 megawatts of energy that they will produce in the first fusion power plant that will be online in the 2030s. And they just announced today, actually, that Google DeepMind, which is the AI piece of Google, has a big partnership with Commonwealth Fusion Systems. Basically, they're, you know, fusion is so exciting and we've been studying it. Government funding has been going to research in fusion for 50 years, right? Because if we can crack it, it solves literally all of our problems. And I mean that literally. If you take your water bottle, my friend, that amount of water, seawater, powers your energy needs for your entire lifetime. So the input is that much seawater, and the output can power everything you need, from driving a car to lighting your home to flying across the country, all these things. And the reason we don't have it yet is because it's hard. It is hard to get the sun to do its thing in a thermos here on Earth and then attach it to a power plant, right? But the reason we were able to take it to this scale is because we were able to talk about what is the vision of fusion? What is it? What is an energy, infinite energy available? How does that even, literally all the wars we fight are about energy. All the things, we spend our whole lives organized around how to not use less, right? I, after studying it for a decade, still can't totally get my arms around what that would mean. But we painted this vision, okay? So you can read sort of some of the you know, bullet points that we were, but it's basically what I'm telling you, right? Let's imagine this world together, right? The other side of that, though, that's all nice, and a lot of people are good at painting a vision, but you cannot get people to give you $2 billion unless you have the other part of that equation, right? Because, so this is, I'm gonna get better pictures for you. Go online, cfs.energy, you'll see all the cool stuff you need. But basically this is the evidence of being able to actually take it from theoretical good idea where we can solve all the world's problems to a power plant that actually produces energy. The reason people believed us is because we first did everything out in the open. So to this day, there were four values that guided the company. And so they actually had these values before I got there. Good on them, right? But even now, as the company is one of the most successful companies out there, the four values that guide this company are on the website, and they guide everything. Every single decision. It's not a put it a poster on the, it's not put a poster on the wall and talk about the vision and the values once a year. They really do make those decisions based around those values. And we were, and one of those values is impact, right? And execution. And the most important one about the first bullet point here is self-critique. When I first got there, I was like, I'm not loving that. How about we don't critique? But the reason that's important is because they are, these are scientists, right? These are nuclear physicists, and their whole approach is the scientific method, which is test and then always be iterating and be transparent about when you screw up, about how hard things are gonna be, right? It's not about telling a rosy picture where, oh, we got this, it's easy, don't worry about that under the table. It's about saying, this is hard, and here's the path, and here's the known risks, here's what we don't know yet. And then this second point is subtle, but I think really important. Related to the scientific approach to things, actually publishing and peer reviewing, like basically getting other people to directly attack your ideas, right? They were not afraid to just say, here's our plan, come at us. Like, what do you got? Give us everything you got, we wanna make it better. And then they actually built something. So please feel free to read up on the ins and outs of this, but essentially the reason Commonwealth Fusion Systems is successful is because they figured out how to contain the reaction in a thermos by using very powerful magnets. And we raised $1.8 billion right after we tested literally the world's most powerful superconducting magnet. 20 Tesla is 400 times the gravitational pull of the Earth. Right? I know. And we did that out in the open, and we said, okay, we announced it to all the potential investors, and we were like, okay, we're gonna test this magnet. We know it's gonna work. They were like, okay. We gave it our best shot. We did it all in the public eye. We did a big announcement, and that's that's a picture of some of the people who worked on that magnet celebrating at 5 o'clock in the morning when it did actually get to 20 Tesla, thank God. Right? We were so nervous, right? We'd staked it all, the reputation of the company, all of it. But I think when you do that kind of work and you put it out there for people to come at you, and then you actually deliver, then when you're telling a story about what you're gonna do next, people actually believe you. And so I think this is applicable not just for raising money, not just for a startup, not just for, right, some company out of, you know, out of MIT, but for everything you do. Okay. This will not surprise you because you've met me at this point. So first I want to start with the picture on the left, which is 2 weeks ago on stage with Baron Davis, NBA All-Star, Bruin. Baron Davis and I knew each other at UCLA when we were freshmen together. We worked on the I'm Going to College program, right? I was in charge of the athletic department. UCLA athletic department brought all kinds of students from all around Los Angeles to campus. We gave them tickets to the game. They saw where we all went to school, and it was an awesome program. And people like Baron Davis were like number one fans and were doing their part for it. Fast forward, however old I am, I get asked to interview Baron Davis at this conference a few weeks ago. And I was like, oh, that's cool. I actually know him already from back in the day. This is just a silly example, but a very, very salient one for me right now, because he's coming on my podcast. Now we're besties again. We're gonna do work together. We had very little interaction at UCLA, but enough that I was like, this is a good, smart person who cares about people, right? There were some athletes who were like, what do I have to do? And Baron Davis was like, what's up, kids? How's it going, right? Different energy. And I immediately was like, yes, please. I'm all about you. And now fast forward, he's now an investor and an entrepreneur. And so I was interviewing him in the context of responsible innovation by entrepreneurs, which is something I feel very strongly about. And so to me, this is an example of follow your intuition on people and invest in people. So for you guys right now, if somebody told you some impossible challenge that they want to work on, remember that, right? In a few months, check it. Maybe they're starting to work on it. Maybe you can help them. What if you could introduce them to somebody who could help them, right? Take authentically invest in people, not because it's gonna ROI and it's gonna pay off and later in your career, but people understand that when you are truly interested in them and their dreams and their passions, and you actually wanna help them, even when it's a silly I'm going to college program, and then, you know, I really can't do that math on the spot. Anyway, all these years later, we get to reconnect and do some real work together, right? So, okay, so that's fun, dancing. Good times. The integrity piece of this is, you know what integrity means, and I'm sure we don't have to have a conversation about this because you're here, you're doing, right? Like, I think you know what I mean here. But I think I use this example and this picture because I should tell this story because this is kind of hilarious. The reason we did this is the day before our interview, Baron Davis was on Dancing with the Stars and did, what is that? MC Hammer, like full on MC Hammer pants, like the whole nine on Dancing with the Stars. And I was like, I can't ignore that. We have to address that, right? It would be awkward if I don't dance with him on stage, don't you think? Thank you. And so so we got, what this picture doesn't show is that literally all 100 plus people in the audience were on their feet dancing with us. Because we were like, all right, folks, we know you're tired. We're like, get up, let's try this, right? And obviously it's good to get blood flowing and all of that good stuff. But also, I do actually think that this is how things actually change. When you're willing to dance and shake it up, like the whole day that we were doing, the whole conference was around innovation. And if you're not willing to shake it up and break some norms, then you're just gonna keep getting the same outcome. And I don't know about you, but when I look around at the world right now, I'm not feeling real confident that we've got a hold on what we should be doing, right? So that is the message. On the last point, this has come home to roost in so many ways, but always talk to people. If somebody is passionate about something and they want to talk to you about it and want your help, always take the meeting. Even if you don't know what fusion is, for example, just as a random example, not related to anything that I've done. But the Fusion Energy CEO that I was talking about, he really took this to a new level. Even if people were like, I hate your company, I don't want to invest, you're dead to me, he would still take the meeting. When they would ask, like, okay, they would say, I don't want to invest in you, but like, who should I invest in this space? And he would take it upon himself to know everything there was to know about the entire ecosystem, right? The whole industry of fusion. And he was known to be an honest broker, and people trusted what he said, right? And that paid off not only for, you know, when we were raising money, but that pays off because people trust that they can rely on, you know, what you're saying. And obviously, if you can help them along the way, even better. All right. Okay, so the last thing, and I'm wrapping up here, so start getting your questions ready, okay? Thank you. The last thing here is, always be out of your league. Always. This is actually one of my favorite things that Baron Davis talked about. He was like, throw me to the sharks. I always want to be in the deep end of the pool because that's where I'm going to learn the fastest. And that, I couldn't agree more. My favorite, you'll notice that my career is, not only is it not linear, it doesn't even share issue areas, right? I've worked in responsible AI, I've worked in fusion energy, I've worked in philanthropy, I've done impact investing, I worked on Capitol Hill, I've tried to write laws, I'm an entrepreneur. On one level, you look at that and you're like, that makes no sense. But it does make sense if you know that the thing, my superpower, the thing that I am best at, is getting people to do hard stuff. I'm like, come on, guys. Let's build something. Like, let's take this to the next level. That's my superpower. And so it would make sense, right, that I just find different arenas to go do that. But that's the shared DNA. And so the reason, so it's not a bug, it's a feature of my life. I purposely go to rooms where I don't know anyone or anything about the topic. And then you know what I do? I take a notebook and a pen and I write down all the acronyms and the buzzwords that people are saying, and then I go look them up. And then I learn, and then all of a sudden people feel like I'm an expert, right? You live long enough and you look up enough things and you, God, AI makes this so much easier, right? You could be an expert on anything overnight. Well, not an expert, but you can know enough to be dangerous, which is how I like to think of it. Okay, so always out of your league. Velocity, so as you're, this is specifically as you're thinking about jobs and internships and things, but where are you gonna learn the fastest? Where is the center of what you care most about learning? Go to that center, even if you have to take a risk at first. Right? Even if the salary isn't as much, even if it's not comfortable, even if you don't know what you're doing, even if you have to move across the country or the world. And then the last thing, obviously, work on something that matters. You know, find the thing that actually lights you up, because you cannot fake that, right? The rest of it, you can learn, like I said, you can learn the acronyms and the buzzwords and the things, but the passion and things you care about, find that and just go work on it, right? And when you have that passion, you are going to get scooped up by smart humans who see that you're really ready to rock this. All right. Okay, last thing. I love the hope. Hope is an action. Hope is not, what is it, Emily Dickinson? It's a feathered thing. Okay, hope is an action. Hope is not a passive, you know, feeling that you get in your heart. Hope is something that you do every day, right? Like I've alluded to many times, I look around and I feel very worried about the state of the world. Specifically, right this minute, I'm spending most of my time focused on democracy, and specifically making sure that we have one in the future, and specifically helping people who are under attack, who are trying to stand up and make themselves known, and who are being attacked for that. That's the thing that I focus on. So that's my, you know, and we talked about this path that I've taken. That to me is the biggest problem that I want to work on right now. And it's because I love a good fight. And because I want, that is the hope that I am putting into action right now. I know that there are more people who believe in each other and the experiment that we have tried, not just in this country, and we've never gotten it right so far, just to be clear. I do not want to go back to something. I want to create the kind of community and the kind of democracy that we deserve. And so that is the kind of thing that I am hoping you will find. Right? Whatever that is for you. I happen to think that's a good one. Happy to talk about that all day. If you want to join what I'm working on, please let me know. But find the thing that is that galvanizing for you. And do it for each other. Do it because we're here to serve each other. It's not just about us alone. All right, I'm going to leave it there. And then we're going to talk more. So please give me any of your questions.
Thank you. Absolutely. Great. And so now what we always do at this part of our, thank you, extra. Oh, you're taking that one away from me. Okay. I'm getting this one now. This, the gray one, is better. What we do now is have a drink of water, relax. We invite you to sit in the center seat up on the stage, and we are going to, you can go around the other, or you can just jump right up. Also, the students are probably laughing because I throw that clicker. That's my clicker. How many times in class have I already exploded the clicker? Yes. And I'd like to invite our BSA leaders to come up to the stage. And are we going to have two mics up here? Okay, you're getting me another one. Great. And here's one.
Thank you, Jima, for sharing a little bit about your work. Very interesting stories and great personality. We're just going to go ahead and ask you a couple questions.
Jima, what would be your advice to students? We have students, freshmen through seniors here. What would be your advice to them to gain experience as they're entering into the workforce?
Yeah. Well, not to repeat myself, but go where you are going to learn the fastest. So I have no idea how to come out of college and get a job right now. I don't. You know, it's been a while, obviously, for me. But I have never seen that fail, you know? I think it doesn't matter how much skill you have. I mean, I'm a good example because I just keep starting over, right? I have skills, but I don't, right? I just keep going to new industries and kind of starting from scratch. So I think that is relevant. I guess, tell me, What are the things that are most on your mind as you're thinking, for those of you who are farther, closer to graduation, I should say? It is a weird time. Like, what are, can I be more specific for you?
Definitely. Like, for me, there's like the external factors, like politically, and it's making it increasingly harder to actually want to focus on, you know, said career, because I'm not sure what it is that I'm actually building for. With the affordability crisis, I mean, it's hard to even afford grocery, anything like that. So it's hard for me to focus and plan on a career when, like, the landscape's changing right under our feet. So I think as young people, like, we're wondering, like, what is our way to, like, forge a path with things changing so fast?
Yeah, right, because this has always been true, but right now it's on steroids, and the very ground is shifting under our feet by the minute, right? And so I think this gives me a whole nother line. We didn't talk a lot about AI, but that is something that I care about a lot and think a lot about, and have worked on, right? We wrote the responsible AI framework for startups, right? So not the Googles and the blah blahs, you know, not the model, the model companies, but how do you actually build responsibly with AI from the very beginning? And so we thought a lot about, I mean, I think AI is a big part of the answer to that question, obviously. I think it is and it isn't going to shape and change everything. What I do know about AI is it is a tool. It's a really important tool. And when it's used well, it's gonna save you a lot of the stress of trying to figure it, right? Like, there's a lot of power there that you absolutely should be harnessing and putting to good use. And especially when you're thinking about the future, I ask it all the time, right? The thing that AI does best, and I actually have my friend developed a job search toolkit using AI, and then I put my own spin on it. The thing that, in my experience, that AI is best at is taking two groups of things and finding the commonalities between them, right? Or pattern recognition, obviously, right? Like, that's the whole thing, machine learning. Use that for what is it that I care about? Just talk to it, literally just dictate, right? Open a chat window, dictate. Here's everything you need to know about me and my passions and what I care about, what pisses me off, what I wanna work on. And then ask it, hey, what's the future of this kind of stuff? What's coming down the pike? What are the kinds of jobs? What are the kinds of job titles? Take another way to approach that is, here are some of my heroes. I do this all the time. Why do you think I have a podcast? I just wanted to interview the people who are my heroes. Anyone can do that now. You can just be like, you want to be on my podcast? They say yes. Okay, pro tip. But also, take the role models and the heroes and the people that you think are really doing a good job and just people you admire, and then figure out what is it about them? What is it about the work that really draws you and pulls you in? What is it, right? You don't just do this with AI, but it is a really nice thought partner tool to do that. So you're also talking about it with your advisors and the people you hang out with. But there are so many ways, you have it hard. You guys have it hard. The world is crazy and getting crazier by the moment, right? But you also have way better tools. And a lot of people, this is the time to draw on the wisdom of the elders, right? Because there's a lot of people around you who have been through crazier stuff than this, right? Either in this time or because they've lived long enough to see it.
Yeah, thank you for that input. You know, being someone who started a bunch of startups or a lot of businesses and for good causes, like, what would you define, like, your success from when you started out to now?
What do I consider my
successes? Yeah, like from the beginning of your career, as soon as you graduated to now, how would you define
that success? What am I most proud of?
Would you ever imagine yourself, like, yes, you said you wanted to be president, But would you ever imagine?
Don't tell anyone, okay? I admitted that to you guys, but let's just keep it in this room, okay?
But would you ever envision yourself where you are now?
Oh, that's, yeah, two good questions in there. No, you can never, I've never met anyone who could have predicted the current, you know, the way, the where they have ended up, right? So many things about my life, that's a longer story, that are not exactly what I expected, right? But I think what's also part of your question that I think I'm hearing is like, looking back, what actually mattered? You know, like what is success, but also like how, in those moments when, in those choice moments, what actually mattered? Like what, you know, how do you weight different values really is what we're talking about. And I guess, I mean, I think it goes back to the intuition, right? That's why that's so important to me, like the values and the intuition part. If you take some time to be smart about that, then you don't have to worry about it, right? You just are very clear, right? You do whatever you need to do, meditate, walk, you know, go to church, whatever. Whatever gets you clear, do those things so that you can make those choice moments, because a lot of, I think, and this is like cheesy that everybody old tells you, but it's true, the really important choices are not the like, the one decision where there were two paths and which one did I take? No, the really important decisions are the things that just accumulated and all of a sudden you're this person, right? I'm sure you've experienced this already. It's not, right? This is not an old person thing. It's just, if you don't make a change, you are endorsing the current path, right? This is why I feel so strongly about our country and sort of, not just our country, but how quickly our country is going down the wrong path, because it's the little, it's the little ways in which, for example, the authoritarian playbook is to attack really famous people, make them obey, and then everybody else gets scared. And then there's, and it's what it's called anticipatory obedience, right? And that's what we're trying to avoid. It's the same in any decision. If you don't actually get clear about your values and really listen to your intuition, you're gonna do the easy thing. And the easy thing is almost never the right thing. You know, it's just like eating. Yeah, I could always eat Fritos, but I don't feel great after. You know what I mean? Like, you guys can, because you have an amazing metabolism. Congratulations. But right, like, it's similar in life choices, right? You can do the easy thing, but it's not going to work out over the long run, you know? So.
So, kind of leading on with the intuition. So, in your speech, you talked about responsible innovation and how you've walked out of interviews because you've taken a look at the person interviewing you. And you're just like, yeah, no, I'm out. So my question for you is, can you share a time when you had to say no to opportunity that seemed really great because it didn't align with your values or your intuition told you not to take it and it ended up paying off for you?
Yes, great question and amazing listening. Bonus points. So the thing that comes to mind is an email that I got earlier today from, so I started a strategy consulting firm, and we did lots of good work. One of the, and with this always happens with when you start a consulting firm, then you get hired by your favorite client, which was Fusion Energy, and you guys heard that story. Okay, one of my not favorite clients this is probably helpful, actually, especially for people studying business. So my business partner it was called Side Porch. My business partner, an amazing human. That was a great decision. And we had wildly different visions for what we were building, right? This is oversimplifying, but basically, as you can tell, I just wanted to work with the best people on the hardest stuff, on the biggest change like that. And he wanted that, but more, he wanted to build a company that would pay people, you know, like that he could be proud of, that he could like build the business and he wanted to do more business and do, right? So those are related and similar, and it worked for a while, but that was definitely a time where it was heartbreaking, right? We had built this thing and I loved it and we had done great work, but I was like, we're taking clients that I hate, Taco Bell. Okay, this is the wrong audience to say that to. I realize now, my mistake. I know you guys love Taco Bell. Just kidding, I don't know if you like it or not. I did not feel that Liv Moss was my calling. So that, like, the Taco Bell was the, what, that was the one. I was like, and we're out. I got an email today, it wasn't Taco Bell, but the guy that we had worked with just before that, where we were all aligned, we were doing good work, but then, as often happens with consulting, ultimately, they just wanted me, this, careful, because if you've ever raised any money, that's the only people, only want to talk to you about that for the rest of your life. They're like, great, Jema, how many millions can you wave your magic wand and do? And that's fine. I love putting those skills to work, but that's not actually how fundraising works. Like, the secret of fundraising is that it's not at all about the money. The secret is that you have to do the hard work of being good and doing something important. And then people are attracted to you, and like, we had to turn down money. We could have raised more than $2 billion in that round. We had to be like, no, enough, we don't want your money. Okay, getting a little off track, but coming back around to the point. The email this morning was from somebody we had worked with at the consulting firm, who literally was using the email chain where we had broken up, basically. He was like, I want you to raise money. And I was like, that's not what we do. What we can do is help you get ready to raise money, blah, blah, blah. All these years, this is probably 10 years later, came back and was like, Jema, I was just thinking about you. What's up? I wanted to catch you up on what we've been up to. And it's great to, I was like, don't you remember? Like, you hated me. You were so mad at me, right? But we both acted with integrity. We both acted like adults, and then 10 years later. So.
Yeah. Yes, thank you.
Something that you also mentioned that really struck me was that your superpower was getting people to do really hard things. And I hear a lot in sports too, like, good leaders are people that bring people with them. My question was, what's one piece of advice you would give for people who are trying to bring others with them?
That's an amazing question. Okay, let me think. I think it comes down to being who you want to be, related to all the things that we've been talking about, right? And that takes a lot of inner work, right? And I'm not saying I've nailed it, but I do think the reason it's a superpower is because people are like, ooh, it seems like she's having fun, and she has an idea, she has some strategy, right? Again, I think that's just leadership, right? Like, leadership is bringing people along. Leadership, true leadership, is not about the great man theory. I think we're very publicly learning how dead that model is. Leadership is about, what can we do together? Right? And so I think it's sort of inherent in the question. It's like, the reason I can be effective, I mean, yes, like, I'd like to think it's all me, but the reason I can be effective is because I am completely turned on from the inside out, right? I'm like, you guys, this is, it's inevitable. We have to do this, right? There's not a, right? Like, that kind of urgency and passion is part of getting people to come along, not with you, but toward a vision that actually is inclusive, right? We, again, not just in our democracy, I don't think we have that many good models of this, honestly. I don't, you know? But that's why I go seek out my heroes, right? The people you'll hear on my podcast, it's because I think they have nailed it, right? They're not the only ones, obviously, but those are people that I think are true leaders who have the community vision in mind and who I want to follow. I don't know about you, but right, like when you're doing the right thing and you have, then who doesn't want to be part of that?
Awesome. James, I have two questions I want you to pick. Do you want it about politics or fusion energy?
Yes.
Which one?
Yes.
Both to both?
Can you fuse them? No, whatever. Really. Let's vote. Politics, raise your hand. Love it. Fusion energy, raise your hand.
All right, politics
it is. Yeah. Oh, but some late ads.
Might have to be both.
All right. So currently,
he's still raising his hand, but I think that's.
So our current political system is set up to be confusing, I think, right, for the masses. And how would you recommend that Gen Z gets more involved politically while there's a lot of pressure to go get a job and work, and we're caught up with all these day-to-day activities while all this stuff is happening in our bureaucracy that we don't feel like we can control? You're doing a lot of work with fighting for democracy. What would you recommend that we do as the next rising generation?
Yes. I love this question. I think our biggest mistake is that we have defined politics as a thing. Politics is just how we do things together. That is literally what it means. That's how it should be. Now, you're exactly right. Politics as defined in the current, right? The idea is to keep it to be an elite thing that only some of us know, right? And like, I know about politics, but you know, and then most people are like, ugh, I hate, I don't wanna talk about politics, right? That's how we got in this mess, right? So I think my answer to your question is get involved in your community. That's politics. Like, if you get elected, great, but that's the outcome of getting involved. It really, like, that's maybe something that happens down the line. It's not, like, I think the way to get out of this mess and the way to be part of something is, you know, for me, like, Petaluma Innovators is just my little example of that, right? My community happens to be super civic-minded and sort of, that's, you know, so I just wanted to find my innovators and entrepreneurs and just see what we could do together. And we've had incredible stuff happen already just because, and I was just writing this so it's super on my mind, because we're invested in not just our little group's success, but because we literally are focused on how can we make our community better, and then how can we take those ideas and spread them across the world, and that's all politics is.
All right, the question about fusion energy now. So it's no secret that like oil and gas companies, which would be probably big competitors in terms of energy, did you encounter any, like, I don't want to say like bullying, but any tactics of them trying to slow you guys down? Because if you guys were to succeed, that would be taking away a major profit driver for them.
It's a great question, but here's the crazy part. They've been involved since the beginning. So there are 8 oil and gas majors, right? You would know most of their names, but you probably don't know Eni, which is the Italian one. Eni had invested in CFS from the very beginning. Like they were, because as you are right in the sense that in the world, oil and gas, right? Like, you either have an electric car or you have a gas, right? Or in my case, you have a hybrid, but you know what I mean. The metaphor stands. Actually, the oil and gas majors realize that it's a finite amount and it's getting harder and harder to find the stuff, right? There's only so many dinosaurs, right? They were invested in fusion from the very beginning. And in fact, Eni just announced a deal to buy the first power plant. So like the first one will, right, they will be the beneficiaries of that. So that's not to say that there isn't, like, they're absolutely, the biggest competitor to fusion, I guess I would say, is the fact that, you know, if you want to put it in nationalistic terms, China is investing billions of dollars in fusion. and they do not have IP laws. And so, right? So, and again, fusion is bigger than just one nation, but I think it's actually a really important, like when you're talking about the kind of the political and the fault lines in fusion, it's really around how are we going to get there in the right way and how quickly we can. And a lot of it is has to do with how what kind of values we bring to this and who's going to control it, right? That's the power is always the right way to look at it.
All right, so to finish this off, I was going to ask you some advice. I'm the TA for the freshman class, and pretty soon they're going to start working on their social causes. They're going to end up making a change.org campaign, promoting and fighting for something they really believe in. So as you said at the end of your presentation, what we really need to do is address the real problem. So what can I do? How can I help them address the real problem? How can I help them find what motivates them to completely throw away where they thought their career was going and focus on what really drives them?
Great question. My first instinct is to say little bets. Like, I don't think you have to throw anything away, right? You're in this beautiful position where you get to just try things, see how it goes, and then, like I said, and I am living proof, try something else. You know, you get bored, it's not working out, you don't like the people, just try something else. But I think that I don't mean to be flippant about, because that's a very good question. I do think it's about tapping into what it is that uniquely drives you, right? And I get that's hard. You know, like I've had a whole lifetime to figure that out, right? And so, especially for those of you who are not sure, like that's you it's not like written on your, you know, on your social media right now. I think for you, it's about how can you design exercises and approaches that are going to help people discern that. I don't know about you guys. I went to Catholic school. And this is the symbol of the nuns who were actually kicked out of the diocese but that's another story. But discernment, right? And sort of that is the key to life. And so our job, anybody who's in a leadership position like you are, our job is to offer the space and the container for people to ask the really complicated questions. And the good news about how messed up the world is there's lots of options, so many things that you can affect. So on that note, thank you. Oh my gosh.